Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Korach. This week, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses Korach. Rabbi Alex Israel is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Korach. And it tells the story of an incredible rebellion which erupts in the camp of Israel. And to really understand this rebellion, we have to read the verses and try and discern what the complaints are. However, this really eludes us. It eludes us because it would appear that what we really have before us is a coalition, is a conglomeration of different interest groups with very different issues, very different problems, different things that are bothering them, who all come together, united by possibly a united ideology, but quite probably by a dislike of the current leadership. And what we're going to try and do in today's shiur is we are going to try and look at some of these different groups and the things which concern them, and then ask ourselves, how did Korach manage to unite all these people? I'm going to begin with reading the first few lines of the parsha, and you will see that there is a distinct problem in the opening lines. It begins like this: Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kehat ben Levi v'Datan v'Aviram b'nei Eliav v'On ben Pelet B'nei Ru'uvein, Vayakumu lifnei Moshe v'anashim mibnei Yisrael chamishim u'matayim, Nesiyei Eida kriyei moed anshei Shem. And I'll translate. And Korach, the son of Yitzhar, the son of Gahat, the son of Levi, took, and Datan v'Aviram, the sons of Eliav, and On ben Peles, the Pelets, but the sons of Ru'uvein. And they stood before Moses, and leaders from the Israelite population, 250 of them, princes of communities, chosen in an assembly, men of great repute. Now we hear here of a coalition. We hear about Korach, along with Datan, Aviram, On, Ben Pelet, and 250 people who are already leaders of the assembly, chieftains of the community, men of repute. What are they complaining about? Before we get to the complaints, let's just deal with one grammatical problem which all of the commentaries ask about. It says, Vayikach Korach, Korach took. And it never tells us who he took, what he took, how he took. There is a verb, there is a subject, there is no object. Vayikach Korach, what did he take? In fact, in the JPS translation that I have in front of me, it says, now Korach betook himself, because there is no object, so the translation has to fill it in for the English reader. He must have taken himself. What is their complaint? They combined against Moshe and Aaron and said to them, you've gone too far, for all the community are holy, all of them, and the Lord is in their midst. Why then do you raise yourselves above the Lord's congregation? In other words, you've gone too far, you've taken too much for yourself. Why are you the leaders? We want a chance at the leadership. But what are the real complaints beyond saying, I want to be the leader, I want to be the leader? What are the complaints? I think that when we read through the continuation of the parasha, we discover what the issues are, and we realize that we have an interesting coalition of different parties. Let me begin with verse 8. It says the following: Moses said to Korach, hear me, sons of Levi, is it not enough for you that the God of Israel has set you apart from the community of Israel and given you access to him to perform the duties of the Lord's tabernacle and to minister to the community and serve them? Now he has advanced you and all your fellow Levites with you. Do you seek the priesthood too? If we read these lines, we understand that the people who confront Moses, the people who confront Aaron, are in fact a group of Levites. And they're saying, we don't want to be miserable Levites. The Levites were porters, were guards, were singers in the temple orchestra. They didn't really have the glamour of being a priest. They didn't have the royal garments of the priest. Moses turns around to them and says, you're already Levites. You already have status within the community. Why do you seek to be a priest as well? Not everybody can be a priest. However, we can identify from this snippet of conversation that in front of Moses is a group of Levites, and these Levites really want to be priests. That's the first group that we can clearly identify. But very soon, if that was from verse 8 till 11, we can hear about another group, and that other group have a different leaders. They're not Levites. These people are from the tribe of Reuven, and they are led by two individuals, Datan and Aviram. Let me just read the text and we'll then identify what we can say about these people. Moses sent for Datan and Aviram, the sons of Eliab. But they said, we will not come. Is it not enough that you brought us out of a land flowing with milk and honey to have us die in the wilderness? Do you also want to be the leader over us? Even if you had brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey and given us possession of fields and vineyards, could you gouge out those people's eyes? We will not come. Datan and Aviram are summoned by Moses, but they say, we will not come. But if you look in the Hebrew, it doesn't say we will not come. It says, we will not go up. Lo na'ale. These are proud people who will not be summoned by the national leader. They deny Moses' authority, but they do more than that. They insult Moses by claiming that he is essentially a failure. They say, you have taken us out of a land of milk and honey. In other words, you have taken us out of Egypt, but you have not brought us into a land of milk and honey. They say, you have not brought us into a land of milk and honey, and you have not given us our fields and our vineyards. You can't pull the wool over our eyes. And they end off their phrase with, lo na'ale. It is interesting because the first group we saw were Levites who wanted to be priests. It would appear that their argument is with Aaron. The second group are civilians. They are from the tribe of Reuven, but their issue is with Moses' leadership. And they are claiming that Moses is a failure. Moses, who did not manage to succeed in bringing the nation to the promised land. Now, I think there are many, many ways to align these two different groups. And I want to align them both in terms of the origin of this rebellion and also in terms of its destination. Let me try and explain. The question is, what was the cause? What triggered, what ignited this insurrection? What was the straw that broke the camel's back that led to this popular uprising amongst the camp of Israel? And this issue is a debate, between Nachmanides and the Ibn Ezra. The question is, what immediately triggered the whole thing? The Ibn Ezra claims that the major issue here was the appointment of the exchange between the Levites and the firstborns. And the claim here was that there'd been a rupture in the natural system of hierarchy, the family hierarchy, where every family had a firstborn who could serve religiously. And that somehow what had happened here was that when Moses re-juggled the people, he reshuffled the pack and he said, okay, now we're going to have priests in the temple and Levites are going to have their special portion, and now the firstborn don't have any communal status. This sort of upset everyone. And the people who had been dislodged, they were the ones who complained. Even the Levites themselves didn't understand why they were being given this sort of middle level. And in a very, very beautiful midrash, a very interesting and sort of amusing midrash. The midrash asks the question, how did Korach start getting involved with this? And they play around with Korach's name. Korach's name, Kuf Resh Chet, if you read it under different vowels, it's not Korach, but rather Kereach. Kereach, in other words, that Korach was bald. Why was Korach bald? Well, if you look earlier on in Bamidbar and Numbers chapter 8, you see that part of the ceremony to appoint the Levites to their new position was that their entire bodily hair was shaved. They were shaved from tip to toe. The story goes like this, told by the Midrash. Korach went to be dedicated as a Levite. He came back completely bald. His beard had been shaven off, his hair had been shaven off, and his wife didn't recognize him. She said, "Who did this awful thing to you?" He said, "Moses. Moses did this to me." You see, Korach was also a firstborn, and he was also a Levite, and it seemed quite unnecessary if he had already been in a situation of prestige as a firstborn. Why should he have to go through this indignity? And therefore, his wife was upset, and through his wife, it got him upset, and that started the rebellion. I think this is legend and midrash, but it goes to the heart of the fact that playing around with the social infrastructure of the nation, of the intimate hierarchy of the tribal system, meant that certain people felt that their pride had been taken away. The fact that Moses was the leader and Aaron, his brother, was the high priest, led to a feeling that there was a certain nepotism, and people felt that something was unfair. And this very much matches the claim of those Levites who we mentioned before. They say, if we're going to be appointed to high office, if we're going to be made to be Levites, if we have our special role, which means that we don't gain land in the land of Israel, because all the tribes received real estate, farms, in the land of Israel, but the Levites didn't. The Levites were meant to be God's portion. They were meant to serve in the temple, and therefore they didn't get land. And it could well be that they're looking towards the land of Israel and saying, well, why can't we either be a regular Israelite or go all the way and be a priest? So it was this reshuffling, the status issues, a social hierarchy, which led to this, according to the Ibn Ezra. The Ramban, however, claims that something very different is afoot. And he claims that essentially what triggered this rebellion was the fact that if you look at the previous Parashat HaShavua, last week's Torah reading portion, we find that the people have been sentenced to 40 years in the wilderness. 40 years of the wilderness, it means essentially that they're all going to die out. And I think we would agree, if we were looking at our political leaders, and we saw that the actions of under a particular leader had led to a setback of a nation, a 40-year setback, we might see that as an excuse or as a reason for that leader to step aside, for that leader to resign. It's very interesting that Datan v'Aviram, those two leaders, they pick on the fact that lo na'aleh, we won't go up. Did you take us up to a land of milk and honey? No, you took us out of a land of milk and honey. In other words, you failed. Your mission statement was to take us out of Egypt and into the land of Canaan. Did you do it? No, we're stuck in this desert and we're going to die in this desert. Moses, you are a failure. And therefore, we will not obey your summons and we don't respect your leadership. It is time for you to step aside and resign. Stand down and let another leader take your place. So interestingly enough, the Ibn Ezra claims that it is the social hierarchy, and therefore it is the Levites who are complaining. And Levites want a higher station, they want to be priests. The Ramban is arguing that what kicked off the entire instability in the camp was the sense that this nation was going nowhere, that the generation was dying out, and that they had failed in their task to go to the promised land, and people were calling for new leadership. What's very interesting is that these two groups seem to get their comeuppance or get their punishment in ways very similar to what they complain about. Because, of course, the people who want to be priests get a test. And that test is that they're told to come and act like a high priest, almost as if Moses says to them, you want to be priests? Come do the test of the high priest. Come to the entrance of the temple, to the entrance of the sanctuary, the entrance of the Mishkan, and there take the fire pan, take the machta, and put ketoret on it, put the incense on it. This is the classic worship of the priest, of the high priest. You want to be an Aaron? Take the fire pans and bring the holy ketoret. And it is at that moment when they apply the incense to the fire, that fire comes out from God. God's fury comes out in fire and consumes all of them. But there is another punishment as well. There is another alternative punishment. The people who said lo na'aleh, applying that sort of vertical axis, the people who said, we will not go up, end up not going up, but in fact going down. The people who directly challenge Moses' leadership, they go down deeply into the earth as the earth opens its mouth and consumes them. It swallows them all up and they fall into the depths of the earth. And that is the way that they get their comeuppance. So what you can see is that there are multiple groups here. By the way, it would certainly seem that there are other groups who we don't hear about directly. And I'll give you just one small example. If you look at chapter 16, verse 15, it says, Moses was aggrieved and he said, pay no attention to their gift. I have not taken not even a donkey from one of them, nor I have wronged any of them. Now, when you look at the rest of the text here, the rest of the narrative, no one is claiming that Moses has taken anything. No one is claiming that Moses has taken bribes or got some sort of payout on the side. But it is clear that once a leader is under attack, once the leader starts suffering from people who are chipping away at his standing, suddenly everybody chirps in and all sorts of rumors start flying about. And it is clear that the most severe rumor that Moses is upset about is people who are somehow claiming that he has been indiscreet with finances, and therefore he falls on his face and he turns around to God and says, I never took anything I shouldn't, I've never been bad to anyone. You can see that once rumor mongering and once the popular opinion sways against a particular individual, all sorts of claims start being made, even things which are unfounded and cannot be proven, and yet once a leader starts becoming susceptible to all sorts of rumors and accusations, people dare to say things which are spurious and hurtful. Let's come back to Korach. It is fascinating that we've mentioned two groups, one which is led by Levi, the Levites, and one by Datan v'Aviram. But where is Korach with all this? And there's a fascinating Midrashic tradition that Korach was the leader of both rebellions, if not all the rebellions. Says the Midrash, was Korach consumed by fire or was he swallowed by the earth? And they say both. He was consumed by fire and swallowed by the earth. He was the leader of both rebellions. How did he manage to do this? Korach was a master of spin, and Korach knew exactly how to come up with a copywriter who would produce a wonderful election slogan. And his election slogan is this. It's in verse 3. You've gone too far. All the community are holy, all of them, and the Lord is in their midst. Why then do you raise yourselves above the Lord's congregation? Essentially, he's calling for people power. He says, Moses, you are not the only holy one. Aaron, you think there is only one high priest? Kol ha'idah kulam kadoshim, all the community are holy. This is a democratic call. All the community are holy, all of them, and the Lord is in their midst. And therefore, why do you raise yourselves above the Lord's congregation? This is an anarchic call which says the power is in the people. And even us who are committed to democracy do understand that we do need leaders. Somebody does need to give guidance to a country or to a community. We asked the question at the beginning, Vayikach Korach. Korach took, but what did he take? I think the answer is that he took the various different coalitions, every malcontent, every person who had a gripe against the leadership, which inevitably there will be, any person who felt that they had been in some way maltreated by Moses or Aaron or pushed aside, He found a slogan which said, power to the people, the leadership is wrong, you were all holy, you should all be given a chance. And with this statement, a very jingoistic statement, he managed to gather a very wide range of interest groups to unite and destabilize Moses' leadership. And it only takes God's miracles, God's firepower, if you will, who are able to restore the balance of leadership. What can we learn about this story? Well, first of all, I think we do gain some sense of caution. And that caution is that even though we all subscribe to democratic values and we believe that indeed the people should be able to vote, and we believe in the dignity of every human being, we should be wary before, when we hear complaints about leaders, maybe to see whether they are well-based, whether they do have any sort of foundation to them. We should also be careful about charismatic rabble-rousers, people who seek to use maybe even very logical and populistic arguments against leadership. But most importantly in this case, when we do have religious leaders, and in this case it was very unique because we don't always have a leader appointed directly by God, we should think about that role of that leader. And if we were in a leadership position, could we have done any different? Whichever way, what I hope I've done today is to help us understand that the Korach rebellion was not just a simple linear group. What happened was that there was a coalition of many, many different groups, each vying for their own power. Had they succeeded, I imagine they probably would have all contradicted one another, and all probably there was been so much infighting. Each one wanted a different thing that this coalition would have very soon broken apart. I sometimes wonder why God didn't just allow them to do that, give them the power, and soon they would fight one another and realize that the whole thing would fall to the ground by itself. For some reason, God decided not to take that path. But that really is the story of Korach, who was quite a genius in terms of his ability to take these different groups and attack Moshe. One of the things that this makes me think about is just how fragile our Jewish community is, and that sometimes we each think that we have our gripe, and we have the things which make us angry. We have the things that we think are wrong, but sometimes we should be very, very careful before we try to dismantle the entire machinery of leadership. We should stake out our claims, we should raise our criticisms with calm and respect, and not try and break the entire system in an aim to try and improve things. I hope I've given everybody something to think about this week, and I wish everybody a good week and Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.